is. Very good afternoon. Welcome along to this special show this afternoon. And I'm going to be joined by two people in a few minutes. We are going to talk about the American presidential race. Now, as you know, of course, it was Trump versus Biden. Biden has now opted out because everybody, of course, knew from the very start the man wasn't capable of running for presidency. But it took the Democrats a long time to admit that. And it was only when the national debate came along and he made a complete fool of himself on national television did they eventually admit maybe he isn't good enough. Kamala Harris is now in there. And she has been described, by the way, the Republican National Committee co-chair, Laura Lee Trump, said Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, who is now the VP or her VP, are the most far-left radical ticket in the history of American politics, according to the Republican. But of course, the Democrats would disagree and say that Donald Trump is a lunatic that's going to destroy America and not make America great again. Interestingly enough, John McGurk from Grip Media wrote a piece in Grip the other day, why MAGA and Donald Trump's tax policies don't mix. He says Donald Trump's slogan in the 2024 US presidential election, just as it was in 2020 in the 2016 US presidential election, is make America great again. There's a reason he stole that slogan from Ronald Reagan, and that reason isn't a very good one. Anyway, joining me is John McGurk, senior editor of Grip Media, and Michael Walsh, political commentator and author. Thank you, gentlemen, both of you, for joining us today. Now, just firstly, John, you know, I find you hard to figure out sometimes. I read your articles, and some days I say, gosh, John is a little bit pro-Trump here. You know, he's certainly given Trump the thumbs up. And then the following day, you bring out another piece where you tear the man apart. Now, there's no doubt it's a Hobson's choice. That's clear. I think we've known that from the very start. Even when it came to Biden and Trump, it was a Hobson's choice. This is another Hobson's choice. She's clearly, and her VP, are clearly extreme lefties. But as far as you're concerned, Donald Trump isn't the answer either.
Well, my views on Donald Trump now could be summed up in the following sentence, which is, I wish the left were correct about him. I wish everything that they said about him was true. I wish he was a great disruptor who was going to tear down the current American model and rebuild it from the ground up. I wish he was going to tackle all the woke stuff. I wish he was going to reset American foreign policy fundamentally. I wish he was going to do all the things that his opponents say he's going to do. But then you look at the real man, and you look at the options, and you look at the long-term view of history, and you say, my God, what are we doing here? I mean, the West has, I think all of us in this conversation, I suspect, would agree that the West has fundamental problems. It has demographic problems. The US has a debt problem. There are massive problems with immigration. There's massive problems with the complete overtaking and dominance of the culture by a progressive sect. And I use the word sect advisedly, that really doesn't reflect the views of a significant majority of people in Western democracies. And what is our answer to that? The left have a very serious answer in Kamala Harris, and she's just picked Tim Walz, people with progressive credentials and progressive policy proposals that they are going to pursue and pursue relentlessly. And what is the right's answer? The right's answer is a guy who, when he was elected, when he was campaigning the first time, said, I'm going to hire the best people. And then prompted to fire most of his cabinet over a four-year period, who didn't pass in 4 years one single substantive piece of transformational legislation, who left the American left when he left office significantly stronger than it was when he entered office, who lost his first midterm election, his second re-election, and then contributed to the loss of a midterm election that the Republicans should have won 2 years ago. And what did you get in return? You got three Supreme Court justices who any Republican president would have appointed. And my concern is not what happens in November, because I think in November a lot of people will get what they want. If Donald Trump wins, we'll all get the Irish Times crying. We'll get crying liberals on television. We'll get panic, and we'll get, oh, it's the end of civilization, and we'll all feel good for a few hours. But what about in 2 years' time, when he does the same things he did in his first term and the Democrats win the midterm elections? And what about in 4 years' time, when he can't run again and his governing record, if it is as abysmal as it was the first time, will simply give us a stronger left with another two-term presidency to make matters worse? Donald Trump, to me, is the equivalent of a very short-term hit that gets you high for a night, but then the come down is awful. And I think the record of his time in office and his time at the height of politics has proven that. He has been a catastrophe.
Okay, that's a fair point.
Except make us all even more unpopular than he was.
Michael, I mean, you know, there is a point to be made that it's a Hobson's choice. Donald Trump is a can of Red Bull when you're feeling tired, and that's about it. That's about as far as it goes. Lots of promises. He's talking again today about not taxing senior citizens on social protection. He's talking about not taxing tips. He's talking about all the obvious stuff. But it is fair to say, of course, that the last time that Kamala and Tim Walz teamed up together, you know, they let rioters burn Minneapolis to the ground. And they also, by the way, she helped to fundraise people to bail people out of jail at the time. But in saying that, you know, what is the better option of the two? Are the Democrats really going to destroy America? I know they're big lefties, you don't like them, but Michael, you flip back and forward over the last 3 or 4 years that I've spoken to you from being a Trump supporter and at one stage being offered a job as an advisor to Trump, which you turned down or you wasn't available to you at the time. But, you know, you flip from being a Trump supporter to not being a Trump supporter, and now you've kind of gone back to Trump again.
Oh, well, that's quite an indictment there, Niall. I would say it's certainly true that I was and am a Trump supporter. I have criticisms of him that reflect a lot of what John just said. I think he's a very imperfect vessel for the hopes of the American conservative movement. He wasn't a conservative when he came onto the political scene. He's a former Democrat. Former New York social figure, staple of the tabloids in New York when I was living in Manhattan during the 1980s. It's true that he came to me near the end of the first term, and they brought me into the White House to start talking about various positions in the second term. And I think they were serious about that. Let me just say this from my insider knowledge, that the whole presidential personnel office had been replaced. And from the summer of 2020 on, they were frantically reaching out to people who had not been part of the administration before and who were actually sort of outsiders that they felt that they had to bring in. Because, as John pointed out correctly, he did fire Donnelly's cabinet, but he fired Steve Bannon, who had been the architect of his victory in 2016. He fired Sebastian Gorka. Both of these are men I've known for quite a while. And he fired a lot of very inadequate people as well. So the prospect of a second term is somewhat daunting, but what's the alternative, really? We have a binary system here in the United States, and the choice is either a woman who was derided not 3 weeks ago as being one of the stupidest, most incompetent, farthest left vegetables outside of Joe Biden ever to run for national office. And today she's gone from being Mary Magdalene to the Virgin Mary herself in a short space of less than a month. And that's the left media for you. When you have a one-party media state, as you guys certainly do in Ireland, essentially, except for present company, and you largely have it here in the U.S. with all the major papers and networks on the side of the left, they can make a transformation like this. In fact, I wouldn't put it past them, given, as you both know, I'm also a lifetime member of the Writers Guild of America, the Hollywood Screenwriters Guild, and most of my colleagues there are on the left. These are very skilled people at developing narratives and producing them, and you're watching it in real time, from the disappearance of Biden to the coronation of Kamala.
But she hasn't given a speech. She's 16 days in, and she still hasn't given a press conference yet.
Why would she? Seriously, why would she? We elected a Rutabaga from his basement in 2020. There's no need for her to say one word. That's what Walz's job is. He's now going to fake to be this avuncular, sort of chunky, Midwestern Minnesota nice guy, but he's as hard and as vicious a left-winger as you're going to find in the United States. So the two of them are basically stealth candidates that represent the anybody but Trump vote. And Trump needs to understand that he's got a hard, hard ceiling. And this is going to be a very close election. But as John and I have gone back and forth on Twitter about it, the popular vote isn't really the important thing in the U.S. It's 50 separate votes for president within the Electoral College. And there he has a chance. So that's what the campaign will be focused on in the next few weeks.
John, if you were an American citizen tomorrow, and again, we all know it is a Hobson's choice, but if you were an American citizen, I'm not suggesting for a minute you're a fan of the Democrats, but who would you be voting for? Or would you just spoil your vote?
I wouldn't spoil my vote, but the Americans have an option, which I've always thought we should have in Ireland, which is to write in the name of the candidate who you think should be elected. So I think I'd probably write in, I don't know, Ron DeSantis would have been the candidate who I think would have been transformational for the United States, being as he basically adopts all of Trump's policies, but has that extra.
Yeah, but that's not going to be the case. And you ended your article by saying the task of making America great again is going to fall to somebody, and it is going to become more urgent. That person will not be Donald Trump.
Here's the fallacy. Here's the fallacy now, which is that people, every election that happens, whether it's in the UK, Ireland, the US, people fall into this trap of the line, the most important election in history. This is actually a relatively unimportant election. And it's a relatively unimportant election precisely because of the reasons that Michael laid out and the reasons that you've just identified. Kamala Harris hasn't given a press conference in 16 days. What does that tell you about her political ability? Not a whole pile. Now, Donald Trump, meanwhile, had the opportunity to point this out. He was in Georgia the other day giving a campaign rally speech. Did he mention Kamala Harris not giving a press conference on one?
Well, J.D. Vance said it yesterday.
Let me finish the point, Niall. Yeah. He spent half an hour attacking the Republican governor of Georgia for perceivedly not helping him win the election after the votes were counted in 2020. This is not a guy who's going to deliver transformational change over the next 4 years. And Kamala Harris is not a person with the fundamental political abilities to deliver transformational change over the next 4 years. She's likely to have a Republican Congress, she's very likely to have a Republican Senate. So the idea that this is the most important election in history, and there ain't even a Supreme Court justice who's likely going to retire in the next 4 years. It is not a particularly important election. What the right is doing is saddling itself with a candidate who is so fundamentally incompetent, so fundamentally unpopular, has a ceiling to the extent that Michael is now saying, oh, well, you don't have to win the popular vote. I think you do have to win the popular vote, if not to win the election technically, then to have some kind of legitimacy. This idea that the right can persist itself in America by winning elections and staying in power and clinging on through the fingernails of just scraping over the electoral college while a majority of people vote against them, that is ultimately corrosive to the views that we all want to see advanced. Why can't we pick a candidate who has the same policies but that little bit more competence and win 53% of the vote against Kamala Harris in 2028, if not 2024, and actually, you know, have a movement that we can be proud of, rather than having to grind and make excuses all day for why Donald Trump is tweeting about maybe Joe Biden is going to come back and take the nomination at the convention. Like fantasy stuff. I mean, why are people putting up with this? Why are we settling for it? It seems to me this idea of the great man theory of history, where Donald Trump is the only figure that can possibly get this done. Only I can fix it. Well, at some point, you've got to ask, what did you fix, Donald? What did you fix? And I think the right, by tying itself to this buffoon of a man, is making a historic and catastrophic historical error, because if Kamala Harris doesn't win this election, then the Democrats are guaranteed to win the one in 2 years and guaranteed to win the one 2 years after that. And we know that because we've lived with this guy for nearly a decade now. So
it's clear Donald Trump will be running again. But I mean, you mentioned already, you know, there's Vivek Ramaswamy and there's also Ron DeSantis as well, who may run in 4 years' time. But just getting back to Michael, you know, I understand the point that John is clearly making. I mean, is Donald Trump at this stage not the hero that he used to be to the American people? Will the next 4 years really matter? Is this really the most important presidential election ever in the history of America? Because clearly a lot of people don't want Kamala Harris in there because of her progressive thoughts, particularly in relation to transgenders and many other things as well. Today, by the way, she was talking about equality of outcome rather than equality of opportunity, which was the worst madness I've ever heard in my life on Twitter. Anyway, but do you really think, Michael, that it's not really an important election? It's not going to make much difference in the history of America.
Well, Sean Hannity, who's an American talk show host on Fox, has been saying this is the most important election of our lifetimes for just about as long as Sean Hannity's been alive. So every 4 years seems to be this, you know, death and destruction election. I agree with John to this extent about Trump, is that he is an undisciplined candidate. I was called into the White House at the end of the first Trump term to advise his speechwriters on how to structure the State of the Union speech. And so I gave them a sort of short course in how to make something work dramatically. And that speech turned out very, very well. That's the one Nancy Pelosi ripped up on television. And I was watching, and I must say, I felt a twinge of pride as the mafia queen of Baltimore tore up my speech. But passing that, that's a good place for him to give a speech because it's highly structured and he can't wander off topic. What happened in Georgia the other day is just crazy. I think he hurt himself badly at the convention speech. If he had just come out and done 20 minutes of "Thank you, Jesus, the Lord has spared me. I have seen Christ the King, and I've done 20 minutes and out," he would have been elected by acclamation. But we got a whole hour more of resentment and hard feelings. And I think that's not good. If I'll say this to John, I think if Trump stays on message, he's fine. The question is, can he stay on message? And the answer is probably no to that. Now, to your point, Niall, I was a supporter of Ron DeSantis. I've known DeSantis since he was a congressman. I was very impressed with him when I met him years ago now. And I thought he was the right man for the job. But the Trump base is still too strong. And they're going to get one more chance to elect their guy. And then we're going to get another view. Are we going to get Trump of the first term, or are we going to get a new disciplined Trump? And that's the jury's out on that question.
Yeah, but you're still pinning your money on him, aren't you?
Well, I'm an Irishman who doesn't bet, Niall. So I'm paid to watch these things and to comment. Mm.
But when both of you say this is not an important election, for me it seems to be, because John, when we look at the world around us right now, not just at what's happening here or in Britain, for example, but across America as well, and you know, this kind of wokeism, or this, as Elon Musk calls it, this woke mind virus. I mean, Kamala Harris is there to promote the woke mind virus. Everything she says tells us that, by the way, including, you know, men and women's sports. Donald, of course, has said that this is not going to happen. He said he will defund any schools who try to promote gender ideology. You know, she wants to increase taxes. He wants to decrease taxes. You know, he wants to make the rich richer. He wants to, of course, you know, charge tax to the Chinese to bring in things, where of course her VP Tim Walz, he has serious Chinese ties. He's been over there 30 times and doesn't think they're a rival at all, so he's not going to tax the Chinese, which is not good for American jobs. So from that point of view, it does seem like a really important election, because they're two completely polar opposites when it comes to, you know, decisions and executive laws that may be made.
Well, it's not, because you cited a good example of why it's not, because you said Trump has said he is going to defund schools that promote this woke gender ideology. Great. How? That is the question. How? Because, you know, he can say it. He says things. He has this pattern. He says things. Oh, and my article that you cited at the beginning of this clip of MAGA and tax policies, and he was going to take taxes off Social Security, is never followed up with the how. Because, you know, is Donald Trump going to go into a community in rural Louisiana and say, "I'm defunding your school and your school's not getting any more money, and why is that? It's because they're teaching something I don't agree with." And I mean, is the next Democratic president, when that happens, going to come in and say to the same school in rural Louisiana, "Well, I'm going to defund you if you keep teaching Christianity"? Every action has a precedent. There are ways to approach these issues, and there are ways to enact policy in a way that's effective. And then there's the Donald Trump solution, which is saying shit, tweeting shit, and hoping that something will happen that'll get you votes. So that's why I don't think the election is in any way important, because I have no faith in this man to do any of the things that he says, because he doesn't have a plan.
But is there a level of symbolism about it? But is there a level of symbolism about it? Because, you know, we can clearly see there's a war at the moment in the world, and the war is between the right and the left. You know, and a lot of people believe, for example, Keir Starmer might end up getting booted out in the UK eventually. It'll be one of the shortest prime ministries ever, and that Nigel Farage may get in. That could be next year. That's a possibility. And with Donald Trump in, of course, Viktor Orban in Europe, you know, people feel that maybe the right will get a bit of a pushback. So from that point of view, it does seem important. There's a bit of symbolism involved in it, isn't there?
My point is this. Taking power is one thing. The British Conservative and Unionist Party were in power in the United Kingdom for 14 years. What did they do? What did they do when they had that power? Conservatives nominally, I mean, maybe not to the same extent as Michael or myself, but conservatives nominally, what did they do with that power? Did the left, after that period in office, did they emerge stronger or did they emerge weaker? You need a serious governing agenda, or else taking power is just a sugar high. you will be entirely ineffective. Now, Donald Trump does not have a serious governing agenda. That is why I can't support him in good conscience. Not that it matters. There are loads of people who will say, well, what does it matter if John McGurk supports him? I support him. Great. There are loads of my colleagues at Grips, by the way, who support him enthusiastically, and they're within their rights to do so. But I can't do it, because I think you need to have a serious... Because otherwise, being in power is just a sugar high. You have to... I mean, I would ask people seriously... Donald Trump won the election in 2016. He became president of the United States. Is the world now more or less woke than it was after those 4 years? Is the United States more or less woke than it was after those 4 years?
I think it's unfair. I personally believe it's unfair to judge him on his first term of office, because unfortunately, COVID-19 probably destroyed that and completely deflected against anything.
I think
he went to... Now, don't get me wrong.
For the first 2 years, he could have passed a whole rake of laws. He did nothing. He did nothing. He appointed 3 Supreme Court judges to the Supreme Court, which was, and that's why 2016, by the way, was a fundamentally important election, because there was that vacancy on the Supreme Court that was critical, that was vital. But I ask you, since 2017, January the 20th, when Donald Trump took power in the United States, has the world become more or less woke? Has the drift been more to the left or to the right? His influence has not been to deliver the kind of outcomes we want. It has been to deliver occasional, you know, well, we'll all retweet that, or ain't Trump deadly? Didn't he say this? Or isn't he so funny? Yeah, he's all those things. He's an entertainer, ultimately, in an era when we need a serious...
He's not just an entertainer. I believe he's a hardworking man as well. But Michael, okay, get to that point. Did he actually achieve anything in those first 2 years? Forget about COVID in the second 2 years. We all know that. Well, that was out of his control to some degree.
I did have an insider view of this, so I can say this. I went into the White House in February of 2017 and was meeting with various people on and off throughout the 4 years. And already by the first 6 months, they had rolled back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of regulations. The United States government, highly complex entity, and the country cannot be run off the president's say so. Although Joe Biden has run it in a very dictatorial manner, using the so-called executive orders, which are fundamentally anti-democratic. That's a whole nother thing. But Trump got a very good start on it, but he then unfortunately fell under the sway of people who were referred to around the White House as the Democrats. And for example, I said something once about X, Y, or Z, and the other people would say, that's a great idea if the Democrats go for it. And by the Democrats, they meant Jared and Ivanka. So those were the people that Donald Trump listened to more than anybody in the early parts of that administration, because he had no prior political experience. And they were and remain leftists fundamentally. So he wound up firing Bannon, firing Gorka. A lot of the things went out the window. But it wasn't from lack of trying. And the other thing I caution John about is I'll be 75 this fall. So I've seen every presidential election since Eisenhower in 52. I've never seen a country rebel so openly against an electoral choice as they did against Trump in 16. They announced that they were going to impeach him 10 minutes after he finished his speech on the steps of the Capitol. They fought him tooth and nail. They manipulated him with this ridiculous COVID nonsense, which was entirely used by the Democrats for political purposes. And he had no effective way of fighting back against it, because he had no power base within the Republican Party. So this basically... In a sense, John's right. This time he's running on a I'll be better next time platform. What I think, which is great, but what I think he shouldn't do is run on a I want revenge for 2020 platform. No one cares about 2020. And make no mistake, Kamala Harris is extremely dangerous. This is a woman who effectively has been appointed to everything she's gotten, except once she got elected Senate in California, which is basically a rigged election since the Democrats own California. No one's voted for this woman. She's a cackling moron, as you can see from her clips. She's a hardcore leftist. Her past, so shall we say, is somewhat dubious, and that will continue to come out. And Waltz is a guy who now is boasting about his military service when he abandoned his unit the minute it was being sent to Iraq and retired. The Democrats are Hollywood at its best. They're entirely an illusion But behind it is a very, very nasty and ugly message. So I do think it's an important election. I'm not sure what we'll get with Trump, but better Trump than the Democrats.
And that's a fair point, John. If we go back in time, as Michael rightly pointed out, from the moment Donald Trump was elected in the election in his first term of office, they were trying to impeach him. He was already, you know, Trump the bad man. And you know, we see how powerful the media can be, that they can encourage a 20-year-old kid to go out and get up on the roof of a building and try and kill him. So we can see how powerful the media can be. So any, you know, kid out there, you know, who has kind of grown up with CNN over the last 10 years, the only thing that they know is Trump is a bad man. So from that point of view, he hasn't really had a fair shot of the whip, really, has he? Crack of the whip.
Yeah, bullshit, man. Like, it's bullshit. I mean, so what? I mean, what did he do about it? The media is unfair. Okay, you have the power as president to appoint members of the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC. You have the power to enact laws. You can regulate. You can use antitrust. You can not, for example, award massive contracts to AT&T, Time Warner, the owners of CNN. There are lots of things you could potentially do as president to ward that off. Oh, you don't have a power base in your own party. Well, you could meet and assiduously court members of your own party and become friends with them and build a power base in your own party. There are things that you can do. Sitting around and saying Donald Trump had a difficult time of it because his opponents were mean to him. I mean, what is he, a six-year-old playing under sixes? This is big boy stuff. And the excuses that we have is, oh, they were very mean to him. I mean, like, they weren't mean to Reagan. Like, they weren't mean to George Chimpy McBush Hitler Bush. Like, they weren't mean to every other Republican president. That they didn't literally impeach Richard Nixon. I mean, come on. I mean, this idea that Donald Trump should have some special kind of Bush League excuse for why he couldn't do it when other politicians could, that is we're deluding ourselves.
But you know as well as I do when the Trump when his term of office finished, CNN's share prices dropped, their profits dropped because they had nobody to give out about anymore. It completely stopped. You know, so they relied on him being the bad man. So they relied on using that negative press constantly throughout his campaign, which is damaging to him and obviously damaging to his rerun.
Fox News's revenues also dropped after he left office because there was also this massive inspirational side on the other side of we're all going to watch the Trump show on both sides of the aisle. And that's what it was. It was the Trump show. Now, coming back to this issue of the election, because people always come, Michael makes a point, and he makes a point where he says, if it's just between Trump and Kamala Harris, I pick Trump. That is a perfectly defensible position. I don't condemn anyone for holding it. My issue is what happens in 2 years, what happens in 4 years, because I think when you pick Trump, you get the sugar high of him winning the election in November. And then what? I read people, I read all the comments that come in on Gripped when I write things that are critical about Trump, and people say, oh, Trump is going to end funding of foreign wars. No, he isn't. That's bullshit. Like, if you look at...
Well, he said he would.
He's actually more committed... Sorry, I'll take out that. That is nonsense, whatever you want me to say. He is not going to do that. If you look at his record...
What makes you think he's not going to do it? He said he'd do it. What makes you think he won't? I mean, look at the money. Look at the money being poured in there at the moment by Joe Biden. I mean, the meme going around, of course, when Joe Biden stepped away. By the way, that meme of Zelensky saying, "Am I still getting the money?" I mean, that couldn't be further from the truth.
Well, yeah. I think
Sorry, Michael, go ahead, Mike.
The president's not a dictator. He can't just do things. He can encourage. We have a very complex system of government here, which is not at all like the Irish system, and I'm finding out, you know, in reverse engineering, as I've moved my family back to Ireland and much more involved in the Irish political situation, I'm trying to understand it. He has limited powers. They all do. And there's a constant competition among the court, the legislature, and the president. So Trump can propose, but he can't auf eigenen Faust, as they say in German, off his own fist, impose things. He has a limited ability to do that. I think, could he be better? Yes, John, I agree with you. He could be better. Do I hope he'll be better? Yes. Are the people around him going into this election with eyes wide open? And this time they really are, having experienced the full force of the leftist hostility toward him? Yes. But they still have him as a candidate, and that's going to be difficult. However, I think that the party is now in much better hands than it was under the previous lady who's now been fired. And they will be smarter about the next 2 years in the congressional elections. What they have to fix, and what I and many others warned them about publicly in 2020, was that the electoral system itself is corrupt. that with ballot boxes and ballot harvesting, and not just election day, but election month, election 2 months, advanced late voting, mail-in voting, no chain of custody, and no identification required throughout the country.
I find that bizarre, by the way, that you don't need it.
But Niall, this comes back to my point, because Michael is entirely correct. That is all a disgrace. Election month is a disgrace. No voter ID is a disgrace. The American system is wide open to fraud. There's no doubt, but that is wide open to fraud. That is not to say fraud. I mean, you have to actually prove it happened, which is another thing that hasn't been accomplished. But it's wide open to fraud. But on whose watch did that happen? It wasn't a Democrat who introduced election month. It happened on the watch of the Trump White House. What did he say about it? He said, "Oh, well, my voters shouldn't vote early. We only vote on election day." He handed the opposition side a massive advantage. Now, like Michael wrote speeches for Donald Trump. I know somebody quite well, actually, who wrote speeches for Donald Trump and was involved in the campaign in 2020, who tells a story that every time they sent Trump to a rally, he would have a list of really good talking points that their polling showed resonated with swing voters. But every time Donald Trump would get up on that stage and start riffing and talking about how he didn't like Nancy Pelosi and calling her names, and that's what the local media would use. So all the work the campaign did behind the scene was tossed out the window because the candidate couldn't stay on message and wasn't disciplined enough to conduct politics professionally. So, he's an entertainer. People like him. I get that people like him. I get that some people would be fuming with me for saying these things about him. But at the end of the day, politics is about the future of the world we live in. And it's about can these trends that we all oppose and regard as fundamental threats to us be reversed? And is this the right guy to do it? And the record clearly shows he ain't it. So what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing? I mean,
we're sitting.
There was a choice. There was a choice.
And I agree with you. I was a DeSantis supporter, but he did not win the nomination. So here we are. I was on the radio with Steve Bannon and a couple of other people right after the election, and they were talking about the ballot, the quote, stolen election, unquote, blah, blah, blah. And I hate to be the skunk of the garden party, but that's my job. And I said, okay, even if you show, then what happens? And the answer is nothing. Nothing happens. Joe Biden is still president. Donald Trump is not president. You can do all of the ballot recounting you want. It's over. So right now, we're at the point where it's over. Now, they haven't formally, well, I guess they kind of sort of electronically formally nominated Kamala, because the fix has been in for her from the beginning, certainly by the time they knew they couldn't protect Biden anymore. And I understand your animus against Trump and the failures. That's all true. But right now, we don't have a choice in the United States. It's either more Democrat, more horrors, more trans this, more forced government fist in your face, or it's somewhat less. And so we have to go with a lick and a prayer and somewhat less right now.
And that is the point, John, that, as I said from the very start, just to finish this up, it is a Hobson's choice. If you're going for, and you want somewhat stability in the country, although some people mightn't agree with me, Trump is the obvious choice, because you don't want to go down the road of somebody who's so far to the left. Some of the decisions, if she does get any power, will be completely outrageous.
That's why I would vote for Republican senators and Republican congressmen and Republican governors and Republican school board members and all the rest of it, because I mean, as things stand, I mean, the Republicans should have a much bigger majority in the Congress than they have. They fumbled it away because, in large part, Donald Trump endorsed candidates who couldn't win in states like Arizona and Pennsylvania at the last midterm. And he's done the same again in Arizona this time. But you need a Republican Congress that can stop her. But I repeat, like, you're talking about the presidency being, first of all, this guy can't run for re-election if he wins the election. So his political clout is gone. He's gone within 6 months of him becoming the president if he wins this time, because he's going to be a lame duck from about 6 months into his term, because he can't run for re-election. And the political focus will shift to who his successor as a Republican nominee will be, who the Democratic nominee will be. And that is a pattern in American politics that is consistent over time. Second-term presidents get hardly anything done. That's the first point. The second point is, second-term presidents almost always lose massively in the midterm elections. George W. Bush did. Barack Obama did. Bill Clinton did. Ronald Reagan did. This is going to be a second-term Trump presidency where he's not on the ballot, where people have the ability simply to cast a protest vote to stop him in 2 years, big Democratic majorities. And then we have the question of what happens in 4 years' time. I have said my case against Trump is simple. Since 2016, when he became the flag bearer for the right, woke has been supercharged, culturally supercharged. He inspires more voters on the left, or at least as many on the left as he does on the right. You want to give them another 4 years of that, of this guy as a hate figure, inspiring people on the left to become more woke, more radical, and probably win more elections. In return for what? What do you get? You get a short-term sugar high and barely anything. It is a terrible decision. It is a terrible decision, which is why there is a case for Kamala Harris winning this election from the perspective of the long-term health of the right. Because if she is as bad as you guys say she is, then that entire process is reversed. It is reversed because she becomes the hate figure, and it is the right that is energized, and it is the right that has the ability to stop her most radical proposals. This idea that this election, that Donald Trump winning, the future of the world hinges on it. It's a fantasy.
Go ahead.
Well, I'll just say the left, as you guys know in Ireland, as I've watched on YouTube or on the computer every day, there is an extreme fascism on the left to crack down on everything they don't like and to criminalize it. I don't think the country, United States, can afford 4 years of Kamala Harris. She is an extreme left wing. Biden's just an idiot. She's an extreme leftist with no talent, but a lot of animus against the country. And so is Waltz. So, John, in the abstract, you're perfectly correct. But I think in the real world right now, between now and November, the choice must be made for Trump. And then you let the fighting begin. Trump has appointed, in a way, a plausible successor. In J.D. Vance. He's young, he's attractive, he's a Midwesterner, he's got a lot of things going for him. He didn't appoint, unlike George Bush, he didn't leave Dick Cheney as his vice president in the second term, so Bush had no plausible successor. We'll see what happens, but I think Americans are going to want to hold their nose and vote for Trump and take their chances.
According to the polls today, Kamala Harris is ahead. I find that personally hard to believe. I don't know who the pollsters are and who they're polling. But, I mean, if you were a betting man, Michael, I'll go to you first. November the 5th, who is your money on? Honestly, I know you all.
It's the Electoral College, Niall. It doesn't matter. Kamala Harris, as I've pointed out on Twitter to John and other people, she can get, there are 22 million registered voters in California. She can get 21 million votes, and they don't count for anything more than if she wins California by one vote. So the Democrats pile up big majorities in these states that are wholly owned by them. But the country was founded as a union of large and small states, and the founders did not want the large states to dominate, which is why we have the Electoral College. If the Democrats ahead by less than 3 percentage points, the Republican will probably win in the Electoral College. That's the way it works.
So your money is on Trump?
Well, I think at the moment, yes. But it's going to be, like Wellington said.
Well, I suppose it depends. The debate is going to be in September, so it'll depend on what will happen in the debate. John, I know you don't like either of them, so I'm not going to kind of pin your colors to the mast here, but I mean, who do you think is going to win?
Donald Trump in his previous two presidential elections has gotten 46.9% of the vote. That's been his ceiling in two presidential elections of the national vote. I would be mildly surprised if he does better than that. I think he has a hard ceiling because simply there are so many voters who fundamentally hate him and vote against him. Now, Michael is entirely correct about the Electoral College. Even Joe Biden's win, though it was a substantial win in the popular vote in 2020, was, I think, about 30,000 votes in about three different states. So it will come down to Wisconsin, Michigan and Pennsylvania, with Pennsylvania being the most important of those. Now, how that's going to go, I have no idea. I think it's significant that all three states have Democratic governors, which probably occurs some kind of benefit to the vice president. I also think it is very likely that the Democratic get-out-the-vote machine will be better than the Trump get-out-the-vote machine, because that's simply, in both of his campaigns, not something he's ever focused on. He will have to change that if he wants to overcome it. And look, I think it's too close to call. I think she will win the popular vote, though, and I have her as a slight favorite to win the election as of right now. I think the problem with Donald Trump is there are just so many people, and I don't mean people like me, I mean regular folks who can't stand him. I mean, when you've run for the presidential election twice and gotten 46.9% both times, I mean, Mitt Romney did better than that. John McCain, I think, did just about that.
But I think that, well, I think it's unfair times. I think it's unfair to count second time round, because realistically, what happened was that was during COVID, and you know the voting system was awry, obviously. So I think it's unfair to kind of use that kind of statistic, isn't it?
First of all, the voting system was on his watch, so he had the opportunity to fix it. Second of all, he was a candidate in an election. That's the percentage of votes he got. It's his responsibility as a candidate to get more votes. We don't make excuses like this for anybody else. This is the only guy in the world we make all these excuses for. It wasn't fair. I mean, like, come on. You're the president of the United States. You're the sitting president of the United States in the Oval Office, the most powerful office in the world, and it wasn't fair? I mean, people got to get this stuff off their chest. Because if they think that wasn't fair, then what do they think regular politics is going to be like? I mean, I just fundamentally reject that.
It's worth noting that Bill Clinton never got 50% of the vote in either of his two victories.
He did win the popular vote in both victories, though, Michael. Ross Perot did take a big chunk of the vote, but he won a very clear plurality of the popular vote.
But he never got over 50. And it's very unusual for any candidate to get over 50. You have the big landslides, Reagan, Johnson against Barry Goldwater in 64. So it does happen. But I agree with you that Trump has a very hard ceiling. He may turn out more people against him than he turns out for him. That remains to be seen. But the electoral system is quite tricky, and it's come down out of six states effectively. So my vote here in Connecticut means nothing. Those votes will go to Kamala Harris. Even if I vote 10 times, it'll still go to Kamala Harris. It's just the way the system works. The American political system, as the Irish system is, frankly, is in crisis. It doesn't really work to reflect the wishes of the people. But we're stuck with it. So I think that's where it stands right now, and it's not going to change until after November.
Listen, it's been a very interesting conversation to both of you. John, thank you very much indeed for joining me. Michael Walsh, I appreciate you coming on as well to joining me. Although, is it okay to call you a Trump fan, Michael? I'm not too sure whether I should call you a Trump fan anymore.
I used to be a Washington Redskins fan, but they changed the name of the team, so now I'm not a Redskins fan.
Listen, thank you very much indeed. Michael Walsh, political commentator and author. John McGurk, senior editor with Grip Media. Thank you for joining me today.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.